Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Diego Alfonso, airline transport pilot, designated pilot examiner, with over 13,000 hours of dual given from Orlando, Florida, who is today's host.
Hello, everyone. My name is Diego Alfonso, and I'm your host with the Florida Aviation Network. Today, I have with me my favorite co-host. Her name is Michelle Cassidy, and she's been a pretty busy bee. I know yesterday she was running around all over the place. Today, if you look to your left, you're going to see Mr. Steve Brown with the CFA, which just joined us here. Steve. Same here. Pleasure to have you here. Hi. Steve, would you please like to tell us what you do with the CFA?
Yeah, it's the CAF. It's the Commemorative Air Force. That's okay. I'm the president and chief executive officer of the Commemorative Air Force. What we do quite simply is we honor American military aviation. And we do that because we fly a large percentage of the warbirds you see in the air. So we own and operate 156 vintage military aircraft, most of them from the World War II era. So we fly them around at air shows, so the big B-17s and P-51s, and we own and operate the one and only, the largest warbird in the world, which is the B-29 Super Fortress Fifi. So if you've ever seen Fifi fly, that's our airplane.
I'll tell you, my hat is off to you guys because I'm an old-timer. And I think we need to preserve those aircraft. I really do, because that there's so much, not just the memory, but the meaning
right.
of those aircraft and the people that flew those aircraft,
sure.
those who made it and those who didn't.
Right.
And they can never be forgotten. And I think that every time I see an airplane like that, it's just I want my great kids to
yep.
be able to see those airplanes.
Well, and that's our goal. Our goal is to keep them flying. We do a lot. We have 10,000 member volunteers that really operate these airplanes. They raise the money. They keep good care of them, keeping them in working order, and fly them. And you mentioned the people that flew them. We're about honoring them, of course. And a big part of what we're doing here coming up just in about an hour at Show Central is we do a big project called the CAF Red Tail Project, or the Red Tail Squadron, about the very famous group of aviators, the Tuskegee Airmen, which I know that you know faced discrimination and fought for the right to fight for their country back in the 40s. And finally, we're able to get into eventually P-51 Mustangs that were painted with the Red Tail, and they became the Red Tail Mustangs. As you know, there was a Red Tail movie that George Lucas made a couple
yes.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a true flying Red Tail Mustang here, a P-51 Charlie model, which is out there at our Red Tail, our Rise Above traveling exhibit. And what we've done is we've produced a movie, put it inside of a 53-foot moving semi-trailer with double pop-outs, and it can fit 30 people in an air-conditioned movie. And what happens is people come in, and we've produced our own independent movie about the Tuskegee Airmen. And we use their lessons of what they've done to overcome obstacles to teach young people that they can overcome any obstacles that they have. So it's a fabulous movie. It's free. And you can go right there and see it in the air-conditioned theater out on the Warbird ramp here at Sun and Fun. So coming up in an hour, we're going to have two original Tuskegee Airmen, Colonel Brake and Colonel Hardy, will be there to present a couple of flying helmets to two students from the Central Florida Aerospace Academy right here at Sun and Fun. We're going to present that to them.
I bet seeing this would give you, like, especially me, I'm imagining this right now, all these old planes flying around. It would actually bring a blast from the past, like, so you can imagine what it'd be like if they were actually flying it still
yep.
from the crowd.
Well, you're exactly right, because, you know, when you go to a museum and you just see them hanging in the rafters, they're quiet, but to hear a radial engine crank up, with all those cylinders and all that oil and smoke and that sound, it's such a unique sound with the radial engine, it does bring you back. And what's very interesting is many times we get World War II members themselves who flew in the war who come up and get back in the airplane, and you can see them reach down and adjust the seat just like they did 60 years ago, and they get very emotional and very teary-eyed, and so it becomes quite a moving experience to see.
That's amazing.
It must be. It must be, because I guess, you know, they said that to remember is to live again, you know, and that sparks memories. That's got to spark memories. But going back to the Tuskegee Airmen, I taught the grandson of a Tuskegee pilot.
Oh, you did?
I taught him how to fly. His name was Jerome Smith.
Well, how about that?
And many, many years ago, probably about 20, he flies for the airlines right now. And I trained him right here in Florida.
How about that?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Well, Diego, you know, you bring up the fact that you trained a son or a grandson. The son of a Tuskegee Airman now flies our P-51 and is actually the squadron leader for the Red-Tailed Squadron.
Wow.
So we have the son of a Tuskegee Airman, which is now flying that P-51, and is named Brad Lang. He's a Delta airline pilot, but he's also the leader of our Red Tail Squadron.
I'll tell you, the work you guys do and the way you keep those airplanes and what those airplanes really mean to this country and to the people of this country.
Right.
And it's just, my heart is right out to you.
Well, thank you. You know, we started back in 1957. We were known originally as the Confederate Air Force for many years. We changed our name about 12 years ago. Become the Commemorative Air Force in keeping with what we're doing. And since then, in all that time, we have the very first airplane we ever acquired, our Red Nose Mustang in Georgia. We're still flying it after we acquired it back in 1957. So we keep flying it. And the kind of neat thing about joining the Commemorative Air Force is anyone who joins it becomes a colonel. All of our members are called colonels.
Oh, wow.
So you can join the CAF, become a colonel, and that's what we have. Our slogan is be a colonel, you know, and preserve aviation. You can get involved, and we have people that started as young members flying or working on the airplanes and now flying B-29. We have the pilot in command right now of the B-29 Fifi is the youngest pilot in command of a B-29 since really the Korean War. He's 30 years old. He became the pilot in command at age 29.
Wow.
So if you think about it, that was the age of the old men that were flying the B-29s back in the war.
Yeah.
And here, this is the youngest pilot we've ever had command this airplane. And we just recently qualified someone who's 32 years. So we've had a crew that's under 32. And our very first, since World War II, the first female pilot, co-pilot named Debbie Travis King. She became the first pilot of a B-29 since the only two other women were, which were WASPs in World War II, that Colonel Tibbetts qualified. So a lot of history going on right here in modern day using the old airplanes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I see that. Okay, so you're saying your planes are from, like, way back in the wars, like World War II. Is that, like, the oldest they go, or is there anything older than that?
Well, for us, we have some stuff that was made in the late 30s, but most of it during World War II in the 40s is where we start. We have Korean and then Vietnam vintage after that. We don't go back to World War I so much, but there are people that do that. At Old Rhinebeck up in New York, they have World War I airplanes that are out there flying. But we're pretty much focused on the World War II era. And forward, that's what's easiest for us.
Because that's when everything happened, basically.
Well, a lot of, you know, of course, the dawn of aviation, military aviation, was World War I. But those airplanes are pretty delicate, pretty fragile. The engines were not very reliable.
Yes.
So in the interest of safety and really from our mission, that's not where we started. Our members were World War II veterans. So they started collecting what they knew. And then it became the idea that the Air Force wasn't saving these airplanes. So we need to save these airplanes. If you think about it, nearly 5,000 B-29s were made, and there's only one flying. Out here on the ramp, we've got the SB-2C Hell Diver, which is a torpedo single-engine dive bomber. There were thousands of those made, only one left. So on and on, you know, there's only two B-24s, and that was the most produced airplanes with 18,000.
Yeah.
So you think about that. All that history is lost. Basically smelted down to beer cans. But our members decided to go out and save it, and we formed the Warbird movement that you see today.
So there's a lot of restoration going on within the airplanes.
All the time. We You know, Fifi, we just designed four new engines for her. We've restored the wings. We've restored the body. Almost all of our airplanes get, at one point or another, probably every rivet and every piece of metal throughout its lifespan will end up being, you know, replaced with new parts and so forth to keep everything in great integrity.
But basically, it is the original thing.
Oh, absolutely. It's all original. Sure, it's original. But just like you replace parts, original parts with original parts and, you know, remanufactured. So it's the original airplane, but you just keep it up to snuff, make sure everything's good, no corrosion, and all the mechanical linkages are all sound.
Interesting. That's very,
you know, one thing that I just learned, I didn't know, so you're saying that the organization goes back to 1957?
Yes, sir. It was formed in 1957.
Wow, I had no idea that was so far back.
Right, and you know, we really made a big name for ourselves in the 70s. We flew all of our airplanes into Transpo 72 in Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C. And there's great footage of the B-17 flying right down the Potomac River.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right to the Capitol. Couldn't do that now, but
right.
We've
yeah.
got great footage of doing that. And so we perform, if you've seen Tora, Tora, Tora at any air shows.
Yes.
That's our group. That's this commemorative Air Force group. Those are our airplanes which go out and recreate Pearl Harbor with a script, with pyrotechnics, and with air maneuvers that simulate combat.
You know, when you were talking about, like, the B-24, that they built, like, 18,000 of them. And I remember I was a young boy, and I saw a picture of B-17s
mm-hmm.
being yeah. chopped up.
Oh, oh yeah.
The big old
cutting sledge. We have that cutting. Same pictures.
And that was always, it's always been ingrained. I can still see that picture. It's always been ingrained. And to think, you know, that at that time, nobody thought and said, wait a minute, let's not destroy all these things. Let's just
right.
take.
Yeah.
Let's just take 100 or something and put it
right.
here. It doesn't cost, they're already built.
Yeah.
Let's just keep them in Arizona somewhere, you know, where they're not going to.
You know, it's funny, that, and that's how we came to get Fifi and our B-17s, but, you know, there's 12 B-17s. We have two of them now, but there were no B-29s, and in 1971, we were trying to find one, and everyone thought that they were all chopped up, but it turns out they weren't. There were some in China Lake, and one of our members flew over and saw a bunch of a field of them. Well, it turned out they were using them for aerial gunnery practice, so they were going down and shooting these up with modern military, but we got the Air Force to allow us to go in. We went and searched and found the airplane, which became Fifi. In 6 weeks, our members restored her to a flyable condition, and we flew her out of China Lake, and that's the last time, that's the last flying B-29 ever because of that. And the rest of them were destroyed or chopped up.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah. Yeah.
In
hordes.
Put in a museum. Yes.
Because that picture of the 17s, there must have been over 2,000 or 3,000.
Oh, I'm sure you're
easy.
Yeah.
I'm sure
there,
you're right.
And they're just being chopped up and chopped up. So now, in order to join the organization, you want to go ahead and tell us what
sure.
is required?
You bet. Yeah, well, you know, it's you join our organization, you can go to commemorativeairforce.org, or you can come to see our tent. We have a big tent right there at the Warbird Ramp here at Sun and Fun. And you can become a colonel. Our annual membership dues are $200, but that gives you an opportunity to help keep these airplanes flying and help your dues and your efforts go to keep these airplanes in the air. And we, you know, it's about educating Americans on how we got to have our freedoms. So we travel around. We perform in over 350 air shows a year with our airplanes.
What do you hope for the future of your company and what they're doing with the planes?
You know, our organization, again, is about, as you get farther and farther away from these conflicts, you know, World War II history is not taught in the schools for more than a couple of weeks each year. A lot of young people don't know anything about it. So our goal is to continue to educate. And, you know, by educating about our past, we can help avoid the conflicts of the future, letting people know how they got to have our freedoms. We've never seen a sacrifice of individuals in our country like we had in World War II. So taking people back and showing them what the will of a country can do to overcome oppression is something that, especially as we get farther and farther away, you know, no one remembers. The people, that generation that fought World War II is about to leave us all the way. So that's our goal.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. Because if you think about it, if you don't keep these in working condition, then the future generations will have nothing to live off of. They won't know
right.
how they actually looked like.
Right. They'll just be able to, you know, visit in a museum like this, but you can't hear them. And
yeah.
you can get it. The great thing about it, we have a program where you can fly, you can purchase a ride. So we have We have about 80 airplanes that you can purchase a ride in, including the B-29 Fifi, including the B-17s, including P-51s. So you can not only see them in the air, but you can actually go out there and purchase a ride and get in there and see what it was like inside that airplane and envision what it was like back in those days when your 17 and 18-year-old young men were in there fighting a war in these airplanes of tight space and, you know, in the cold with non-pressurized airplanes. So that experience really takes you back.
Yes,
it's much better than a video game or, you know, the electronics. You can actually feel all of your senses engaged.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of meeting, because I'm originally from Cuba, but we left Cuba back in 61 and we went straight up to New Jersey.
Okay.
And in New Jersey, there were I met one of the crew members of the Enola Gay.
Yes.
And he was he had a candy company, candy and tobacco company.
Okay.
And he served stores, and you know, my father had a little candy store, sort of.
Right.
And and one day he came over, and for some reason I had an airplane in the at the store, and that was it. That was instant. And I believe he was a radio operator.
Wow.
If I wanna.
Well, you know, the navigator of the B-29 Enola Gay is still alive. Dutch Van Kirk.
Okay.
He's still alive. I think he's 96. I was just with him this past year. So he's still alive, the navigator from the Enola Gay.
Yep.
Right there. And Colonel Tibbetts.
Tibbetts.
Tibbetts, as you know, the pilot in command, he was a big part of the CAF and flew in our airplane, Fifi. And now his, I think it's his grandson or his great-grandson, the fourth, Paul Tibbetts the fourth, is a colonel in the United States Air Force and recently commanded the B-2 unit, which was the reconstituted 509th. So he's still active in the Air Force, and he just flew on Fifi last week in a B-29 and took his children. So, you know, the legacy continues here. They can step into the same airplane that his grandfather was flying in and experience what he did this many years later.
That must be an unbelievable experience, you know, feeling, you know, from somebody to be able to relate to their relatives in the same environment.
Right.
Well, maybe not 100%.
Right.
But
at least feel it from that exact cockpit.
Yeah.
To sit there and say, wow, this is what he sat, this is where he saw, this is the way it felt.
That's correct.
Maybe not getting fired at, but...
That's right. But I'm here, you know, and this is what he felt at some point, you know.
Absolutely.
Minus, of course, the anxiety and all that, the fact that you're going to have people trying to shoot you out of the sky, you know,
that type
of thing. So now, what is in store right now? I mean, do you have any projects that you're working on, or are all the projects completed?
No, you know, we're always finding new projects to work on. We're looking at developing future larger centers, operations called air bases. Right now we have large centers, like in Tempe, Arizona, we have a big facility where you can go, a big museum, our B-17s there. We have different fighter airplanes there, B-25, and in Southern California and Atlanta. So we look at making a bigger impact and bigger footprints in bigger cities in the future. So we look to put more and more of our airplanes in population centers that can be enjoyed. We produce air shows. The Wings Over Houston Air Show is our air show. We have one in Midland, Texas, where I live. And all over the country, we find different ways to educate our mission. We still have airplanes that are being restored. We have a couple of A-26s right now in restoration. We have a P-47 Thunderbolt that's coming back into registration.
Wow. Yes.
So we have a lot of neat airplanes that are either being flown or being restored. But we're now moving to the point where 86% of our fleet is flying, and we're closing in on getting everything in flyable condition, which is always the goal.
Yeah.
I remember that when you say P-47, as a kid, because the Cuban Air Force had P-47s.
Okay.
Yeah, the huge, huge machine. I mean, I was kind of small. Well, I'm still small, but a little smaller,
right,
I would say. And I remember when I step up right next to the airplane, because we've seen in pictures, a fighter doesn't look that big.
Right.
But when you stand up right next to it, especially when you're a kid.
And that's a big one, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's a mahive.
That is a big one.
The propeller alone, the side of the blades and everything else. And we also had P-40s.
Right.
The Cuban Air Force. And then they had the T-33s and stuff like that when they started to make the transition to jets.
Sure.
You're too young to know that stuff.
I'm just amazed right now at all this I'm getting right now. I didn't know there was so much history behind all these planes.
It is, and that's why it's good whoever's out watching and contemplating coming to Sun and Fun. There's a lot of neat things to see, certainly the experimental and the aero bags and so forth, but to come see the history of the Warbirds, it's typically the most, really one of the most popular things to come and see at an air show and talk to guys that are flying them now or that flew them in the war and really just get that feeling of nostalgia. That was a unique time and a unique time in our country's history.
Yeah, there's something that you should know because he mentioned WASP.
Yes.
Did you know what that was?
The Women's in Aviation.
Oh, okay.
I've learned about
you're
that.
You're good. That's
being
right.
at an aeronautics school, you kind of learn a lot.
Women's
Great. Well, they're doing a good job because I figured I want to fill her in.
Yeah, the Women's Air Service pilots there, the WASPs. And, there's still several WASPs around, and we've had them out to fly. It was interesting, that interesting story about the B-29 when Colonel Tibbetts was in charge of the program to bring the B-29s on. There was just towards the end of World War II, and the pilots were very scared of the airplane because it has no, it's all mechanical steering linkages. There's no hydraulic assist. It's all Armstrong.
Yes.
And they were very tentative about flying these airplanes. So what Colonel Tibbetts did is he trained two WASPs, so two women, he trained them to fly the B-29. So they took out, and these two little women walked out, got on the airplane, took off, and flew it around. And it shamed the men into, okay, well, I guess we'll get in there and fly them. So he was very brilliant. And those were the first and only two WASP pods of a B-29 until most recently the woman, Debbie Travis King, that I told you about, became a pilot. And so she, the one of the WASP pods from the B-29 is still around, and she got a chance to meet her. So that was a neat neat history gapping the bridge there.
Yeah, but I never met Mr. Tibbetts. I never saw him personally, but that must have been a tremendous experience for these guys back in those days on that mission. It's the first of everything, you know.
Well, sure. Yeah, the first and only, thankfully, and certainly changed the complexion. It ended the war. So.
Oh yeah, it ended right there, Steve. We have reached that point where I feel real sorry because I really enjoyed this conversation.
It was a pleasure talking with you, Melissa.
Same
thank
here.
You very much.
Michelle, thank you so much for helping out. This is the best co-host.
Thank you, Diego.
Right here.
Thank you.
And Steve, wish you a lot of luck with this. And I'm going to go by there and pay you guys a visit.
Please come by and see us.
And for you out there, just stay put because we're coming back with more information that you don't want to miss. See you in a little bit.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.